Accession number 27801, Mrs. Margaret Lees, Reel 8. Now, so your husband was going to have to go back to war, and the Japanese
war,
obviously.
Yes, he was. Yes, I'm trying to get this exactly in sequence, because we did have a flat in Ceylon, and when Belsen was freed, we were living in this flat. He certainly wasn't with the army then. And that was absolutely shocking in a way I think it almost wouldn't be as shocking now, because we're used to so many horrors now.
Now tell us about, what was your reaction to it? It's a concentration camp, but I mean, that's what you're...
I was sitting on the veranda, and somewhere, I knew there was something dead in a ditch somewhere near, so there was a horrible smell which didn't help. And I opened the newspaper, and there were pictures of Belsen. That was the first time I'd come across him, because he didn't have a radio. And there were these horrific pictures of Belsen. Well, absolutely indescribable. One could not believe that such a thing could happen. Repulsion, horror, thankfulness that we got there.
And what's the next thing you remember? You're still working
at
the wireless station?
Still working. But of course, towards the end of the war, married women became a priority for demobilisation.
Even before the Japanese war had finished?
Yes, yes. I came top of the list, and they were starting to demobilise. Obviously, they didn't need so many people, did they? So I was determined I wasn't going to come home to be demobilised, which is what one was supposed to do. I wanted to stay out there with him. And when he came back from Burma, he was posted to Calcutta, all the ghastly places. But I was determined I was going to go with him, so I set about getting demobilised out there, which presented a great difficulty for the Wrens, I think. So eventually, they sent me on extended leave. I still have my leave pass. I still have my pay book. I have a feeling I could now get a casual payment or something out of all this back pay. But they sent me on extended leave.
So you weren't demobilised, you were put on extended leave?
At that stage, yes, and allowed to go to India with him. So we booked a trip on a Dakota, which the RAF were running to Calcutta, and we bribed a rickshaw boy, paid a rickshaw boy to sleep in the garden. So that, of course, we had to get a bus the next morning, and although we had hardly anything in the world, we did have too much to actually carry. So he slept in the garden. In the morning, we put our luggage, all our worldly goods, onto his rickshaw, and we walked, and we got the bus. And we got to wherever this airfield was and put on Dakota, which had crate on board, but down one side, down the port side, inside, was a very narrow bench which we sat on. The senior officers first, all dripping with their gold braid and things, and then, well, my husband was a squadron leader by then, so he was a senior officer. And then he came, and then I came because I was with him, and we went right down to a corporal at the end. And we all sat more or less to attention because we couldn't slouch on this seat. And amongst us all was an American soldier wearing a topi, which nobody else ever wore. And he was friendly, of course. And he started a conversation. He said, gee, he said, we've got a lot of crate on board. And everybody, in the way they did on trains in those days, before the war, we all turned and looked at him and didn't say a word. So he crouched down under his topi, poor man. Anyway, we went to India. Now,
what month would that be, roughly? Would that be June, July?
Oh, golly. Well, this is in between... Yes, it's not terribly... I'm sorry, I don't know what month it was. I don't know.
We'll just put approximately.
Yes, yes, it certainly was summer.
And you were going to Calcutta?
To Calcutta. So we landed at Dum Dum Airfield, and we drove into Calcutta, And that really was something that had to be seen. I'd never seen such emaciated people lying around the place. It looked like Belsinger's, never they were dead or alive. And Calcutta's a teeming sort of place, dirty, teeming, life going on, quite exciting in a way, but oh, such poverty, dreadful.
And you were basically on extended leave.
Yes.
You weren't actually...
I hadn't actually been demobilised, no. Nobody expected me back, but...
So what happened? Where were you going to live?
Well, I had an aunt who lived in the coal mining district in Bihar, and she had invited us to go and see her. So to begin with, we didn't think too far ahead, I don't think. To begin with, we lived in a hotel in Calcutta, which was alive with Americans and their gum. You'd pick up a coffee cup and it would be stuck to the saucer and so on. Oh dear, what a place. And rats, lots of rats there too. And anyway, I went to stay with her, or we both went to stay with her, which was quite an experience too. She was my grandmother's twin. So that was lovely to see family again after the war. And Bill had to go back to Burma. So whenever Bill was in Burma, we went down back to Calcutta, but whenever Bill was in Burma, I used to go and stay with her. But in Calcutta, we had to obviously find somewhere to live. And we found there was a place which was run almost charitably for people in our position, officers and their wives, who had to have temporary accommodation. I think 3 weeks was the limit in which you could stay there. And we stayed there. It was reasonably priced. That was the lovely thing. We stayed there. And again, I had jippy tummy. I always seemed to have a jippy tummy. I was ill there. But the day before he had to go back, I can remember exactly where I was, exactly where I was sitting, absolutely everything about it, like people can when they heard of the death of Kennedy. I can remember exactly where we were sitting when one of the people we'd made friends with there came over to us with a newspaper. And he said, "Have you heard about this new weapon?" And this was the atom bomb. And I thought, my goodness, the war is over. You could hardly believe it, but the war must be over.
And that was news that they dropped
that
it
was
on
news.
The 6th.
Yes.
Yes.
To begin with, we couldn't believe it. Then we thought in wartime, it hardly would have been allowed in the paper unless it was true. It was quite, quite unbelievable. But I don't remember being sorry for the Japanese or anything. I hadn't yet met the released prisoners, but one had a pretty good inkling of what they were like.
And I mean, it must have been a tremendous relief because of your husband.
Absolutely.
That he would be safe, or presumably safe.
Oh, absolutely.
So
then he of course wasn't in Burma after that. He got a posting to a forces newspaper in Calcutta, and we had to look for digs. So we found a lovely flat. I mean, this is not really of interest.
No,
as regards
it's
the war.
Do we just get you back to civilian life and then we
yes.
So you what happened next? Is that you lived in Calcutta for how long?
I suppose about a year altogether, probably more.
Into 1946, deep into 1946.
44. Oh yes.
And what were you doing? I mean, he was working on the forces newspaper.
Yes, that was a bit lonely because I didn't know anybody. Well, we answered an advertisement for a flat and we went to see the landlord and it turned out to be a lovely flat and a very nice man. He was a very successful jute manufacturer. Or do you manufacture jute? You know, he was in the jute business. And his family were all on leave in the hills. And he wanted to go and join them, and he didn't want to close the flat because he thought his 10 servants had had enough holiday. So he wanted someone to run the flat for him. Well, I'd never run a house, let alone in India, where I couldn't even speak the language. And I got more and more panic-stricken and quieter. And finally, I managed to say, "But I'd never run a house." And he said, "Well, do you good then?" So we went there, and fortunately, he was there for the first little bit because he saw me over the real humps, I think, And every morning Cook used to come to me and I used to have to give him orders. I did try to take, I took some lessons, but I really have never been good at languages. So I didn't get on with my Hindustani very well.
How did you get on with the Indian servants though?
Well, I liked them all. They were, I always liked, I liked the Africans, I liked the Indians, I liked the Sinhalese, I liked them all. These servants were so correct and so good. The head bearer was, well, he ran the place while the family were away. But we used to, Bill used to make models and things, but he decided he'd make a hot air balloon. And while I built a model of the Santa Maria, so we used to be hard at work, and I think the servants were quite interested in all this, so they never showed it. And then the day came when we had to fly this hot air balloon. So they provide the kerosene and everything to produce the flames. And we went into the garden. Of course, they didn't show any interest at all. They were absolutely correct. But we could see little figures lurking behind the bushes. And of course, the whole thing caught on fire and there were little titters. And when we got back to the flat, there they were all in their correct places and everything. They were lovely, yes. But I did discover that the head bearer had sent five of them on holiday and I didn't know.
Now, what about your social life? I mean, it had been very important to both you and your husband in...
Yes, it had.
What about the social life there? Did you socialise with the English expat community or the forces?
Well, the forces.
What was the social life
well,
like?
Well, there was a club where we used to go. I don't know, eventually, before Christmas... Ray's family came back and they asked us to stay on with them. So that was nice because we were in a family. And then they started sending back the prisoners of war from the Japanese prisoners of war because, of course, the war ended. And, well, I've said that, haven't I? They started sending them back. And these people were very good. They used to invite them around for meals.
And what state were they?
And... the ones who came to Calcutta, I suspect, were the ones who were a little bit more healthy because, of course, I was still corresponding with girls in the salon and they had the bedridden ones there where I suppose the climate was slightly better. But I know that Sheila used to purposely order meals that were rather light, thinking perhaps they had to eat like that. In fact, when they discovered this, they said they didn't think that was necessary. And they used to run dances so they could meet girls because, of course, they hadn't met women for ages and ages. And I used to be roped in to dance and Bill used to be roped in to help.
Were you aware of any unrest in India? You know, the Congress Party, the various quit India.
Oh, yes. I think it was all a big joke. Oh, they were always having parades and riots. They had some sort of riots while we were there, and all the water was cut off. And we didn't go out for a while because it was a bit dangerous. And Bill used to, he used to have a jeep collect him for work every morning. One day he put on his revolver, and I said, look, I don't like you wearing it. I've been told to wear it. And he said, no. So I said, well, if you start shooting off, you're a dead man. So he very grudgingly, with me nagging, left it behind. And the next day, there was a hole in the windscreen of the jeep. And I said, what? However did you get that? And he said, well, you wouldn't let me wear my revolver and we were fired at. But I did discover from his driver that, in fact, it was a stone that had been thrown up.
Now, what about your return? When did you... I mean, unless there's anything else about India that you recall.
I recall so much, but to do with the war, perhaps not an awful lot.
Well, what about your return home? Sometime in 46. It doesn't say here.
Yes.
How did you come to return home?
Well, we were with the Lowells, and we knew that our time was coming when we'd be sent back. But Christmas was coming. And I know my mother thought we'd be home for Christmas, which I kept saying we wouldn't be. So, anyway, then finally Bill got his posting just after Christmas.
Is this Christmas 46 or Christmas 45?
Oh, I think it must have been Christmas. Gosh, isn't it difficult to remember all these things? Surely it must have been 45. I think.
So you came home about 44. January 46?
No, 44 I was married. 45. Can't have fitted all that into a year, can I? It must be 46, I think.
Oh, yes, for January 46.
I think this must be Christmas 46.
Christmas 46. So you came home January 47.
Couldn't have fitted all the rest into that time, could I?
So what happened?
Then finally he got a posting. So we had to go to the transit camp at Bombay. So we joined a troop train in Calcutta, which was going to take 2 days to cross India. And the Lowells came and saw us off. And it was quite sad saying goodbye to them. We were very fond of them by then. But off we went. And we found ourselves in a compartment with four berths. And there was us. And there were two men, two Indians, that was all right. But on the floor, no, an Indian and his wife, that was it. A young Indian, naval officer, and his wife, which could have been so nice, so entertaining. I know, this was New Year's Eve, yes. And it could have been so interesting and so nice with this couple, but on the floor they had a coolie woman who was sort of rolling around, and we gathered she was going to spend the whole journey rolling around on the floor, which wasn't very savoury looking, and anyway, we didn't want her rolling around on the floor there. So my husband went to the CEO of the train and said, look, there are five in this compartment for four. Can you do something about it? And he came along, and she was very offended, and she said she couldn't manage without her servant. So she moved out into a women's compartment, and he got a pal of his in. So I was in this compartment for the night with these three men. Well, when we rattled along, and when we stopped, they'd stop and buy curries and things on the platform, and we would go along to the dining car. But by then, relations were rather frozen, which was a shame. It was a great pity. Anyway.
I've just found it was New Year's Eve, 1945, 1946.
Oh, was it?
So it is December 45.
You see, I'm forgetting.
No, that's all right. It's just I hadn't seen it.
So much was fitted into that time. Yes.
So how did the rest of the journey go?
Yes. Well, the night time came. We were supposed to bedding rolls for this, but this was our last little lap of India, and we weren't going to buy bedding rolls especially. We were always broke anyway, and we just weren't going to buy them. We weren't going to need them again. So we hadn't. We just had, I don't know, I had some fur slippers I brought to go back to England, and we had coats, and that was going to be it. And of course, it could get quite cold in the middle of India at night. So the first night came, and there was a little bathroom off our compartment, and they said, we want to go first. Well, no, we said, you go first. So the young Indian went in there first, and he was some considerable time, and then the door opened, and it was like something out of the Arabian Nights. He was standing there in flowing silk robes, all highly embroidered, and he unrolled his bedding roll, which had embroidered sheets, and, well, golly, I'd never seen anything like it. And he got into bed and he pulled the sheets over his head and obviously said his prayers. So then the other one went in. And of course we couldn't compare notes, we couldn't look at each other because we were going to laugh. And the other one went in and he was some considerable time. The door opened and he was there in ordinary pyjamas. And he was in the top bunk. So he went along and he climbed up into the top bunk. But what he didn't realise, and we soon did, was he had an enormous head to tear down the seat of his trousers. So all was revealed. I think they must have thought we were a very odd couple. And as we got into Bombay, they had this festival they have where they fly kites. Everybody flies a kite. And they soak the strings in glue and powdered glass and they try to cut one another down. Wonderful. And now, Bill had been posted to Bombay years before he knew me. So he knew Bombay, so we had a good look at Bombay, and we were in a transit camp outside Bombay, which consisted of a lot of hotels which had been built just before the war, and they'd been built when the monsoon was blowing out to sea. What they didn't realise was that when it blew in, it blew over all the waste from Bombay, and the smell came with it. So we were there when the wind was blowing in from the sea, and the smell was indescribable. There was no mattress on our bed, or on any of the beds. There was no mattress because we were supposed to have bedding rolls, but it was one of these sort of chain link things you lie on, so we just had to lie on that. We managed to get an extra blanket from the stores. Interestingly, you might like to cut this out. My son started there. That's where he was conceived. Just shows what you put on a chain link bed, doesn't it? Yes.
Now, anything else about your time there? You weren't there long, were you, in
Bombay? No, it seemed a long time. Every morning we used to see huge, great chalk letters on the road, "Quit India." They made it quite obvious that they didn't want us there. Well, that used to amuse us because that's just what we were trying to do, trying so hard to quit India. And we used to retreat. Bill had some friends, some old friends, who had a guest house outside this place, and we used to walk, go to them and have lunches and things. But then eventually, I don't know, we were told, I think one day that we were going the next day. Oh, we'd made friends with a very nice couple. She's a widow now, but I still am friends with her. We used to go swimming. There was a lovely swimming bar somewhere in Bombay. And then we were told we were coming home. So I suppose we had transport. I don't remember getting on board or anything, but this was the Cape Town Castle. And it was an RAF ship. I mean, there was nothing but RAF on board. And for some extraordinary reason, they'd made it a dry ship. And the RAF, I assure you, were not used to being dry. I suspect a lot of them smuggled stuff on board.
And what was the voyage like?
Well, I hadn't been seasick on the way out from being fairly rough and everything, but I felt sick most of the way. Of course, I didn't know I had a baby on the way. But it was usual thing with troop ships. You know, as we went out, a ship came in, everybody got to the side and shouted out, "Get your knees, Brown." And all troop ships, I've discovered, all the soldiers think of the same thing to say at the same time. They all shout at the same time. It was a pleasant enough voyage. I think we just used to sit around on the deck and talk. Again, we had nowhere to sit except on the deck, but who cares? We were all going home. I used to feel sorry for the Indian women who'd married some of the airmen, because the airmen had been given every chance to, well, I suppose they'd been given a chance to ditch their wives. That sounds awful, but I think it'd been pointed out to them before they ever married them how difficult this was all going to be. And before they left, I think they'd both been warned what it'd be like for them in England. And indeed, as it got colder and colder, I felt terribly sorry for them, because I don't recollect there being any heating on board. And they used to go sort of peculiar blue colour. That really was sad, poor things. But coming through the Suez Canal, I remember there was nothing but sand everywhere, and standing on the edge was a soldier hitching a hike from us, thumbing a hike, because he didn't get it.
Now, what about your reception when you got to Southampton?
Yes, came to Southampton, and of course, we all got to one side of the ship. Of course, that tips the ship a bit, so they sent us all to our cabins. Now, it does. They have to send you all to your cabins, so we all sent to our cabins. And we were lucky. We were on the right side, and we could see the people who come to meet people. And some of the women were in tears because they couldn't see their man, who was probably the other side of the ship. I can't remember. It was a band. I can't remember. It was quite a welcome we had. And then eventually we started going ashore, and they let the families go first. And we got onto the quay, and I turned around and looked up, and there were some friends of ours on the top deck. So I called out in what must sound a very squeaky voice, "Goodbye." And every single soldier lining that ship called out in a little squeaky voice, "Goodbye." And then, of course, we came home to wartime England. Oh, that was a challenge, wartime England.
Now, we sort of get you settled down, and there's a couple of points we need to raise about because of the problems that your husband had. That if you can bear to talk about, we'd like to talk, as long as it doesn't breach your privacy, you know. But firstly, when you got back to Southampton, you still weren't demobilised, were you?
I don't remember at what stage I was demobilised. I must have been demobilised by then, because I remember we used to get some money to resettle us. And I remember that I thought they should have paid that money by then. So at some stage along the line, I must have been demobilised. I don't remember.
One thing that happened is, how did your parents react to your return? And of course, you weren't returning alone.
I wasn't returning alone.
They'd sent off their little girl to war, and you'd come back a married and pregnant woman with a husband in tow.
That's right. I didn't realise I was pregnant then. So that, at least, they were spared. It wasn't very good, because they didn't like him very much.
Any particular reason? Was this because of the way...
I have a feeling my parents wouldn't have liked whoever I brought home, to be honest. But the fact remains that the marriage did eventually break up, so perhaps, I don't know, perhaps they were right, I don't know.
And what were you going to do when you got home?
He had been regular Air Force. He was in before the war. So he hoped he would stay on, but of course there was no certainty about it, so we've made up our minds that if he wasn't kept on, we'd go back to Ceylon tea planting.
That was your
That
your
was what we had planned, yes.
Now, but he was kept on.
He was kept on, thank goodness, because I discovered that he told my father that he had got a permanent commission, and of all the truthful men in the world, my father was the one that he would have been. I would never have told him something I wasn't sure of. But there we go.
So he had a regular career. And
yes. Right. Yes.
Now, what about you? You were pregnant, of course.
Yes. Well, as I say, I didn't know. We managed eventually, after this and that, to get ourselves a maisonette in Kensington. Because
where was he serving?
He was stationed at the Air Ministry. And we got this maisonette. I mean, that is a whole book full in itself. And I wasn't feeling well, and my sister dragged me off to a doctor, and of course I was pregnant. I don't think that had really occurred to me. I think I thought all the moving around had upset my inside.